We're ready.
Okay. I'd like to call this October 6, 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8 o'clock. Agenda item A, call to order, just did that. B, roll call. Ms. Becker, would you please call roll?
Yes, Dr. Mastores.
Here.
Dr. Cohen.
You're muted, Dr. Cohen. Oh, go ahead and move on, Vaughn.
Dr. Carpenter.
Present.
Dr. Brown.
Present.
Ms. Galan. Ms. Galan. Okay, noted absent. Mr. Hamed.
Present.
Thank you. And Dr. Moffitt.
Present.
And Dr. Carpenter, one more time.
Dr. Cohen.
Or Dr. Cohen.
Note Dr. Cohen absent for the moment.
Okay. Board staff, Director Whelan.
Present.
Vaughn Becker. Present. Legal counsel, Mona Baskin.
We didn't hear you, Mona.
I do not see Mona.
I see her.
I saw her on here. Oh, Mona, you're muted still. I can see you talking though.
I think her audio is down. Your microphone is open, but I don't hear you either.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good morning, Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General representing the board.
Thank you. And Madam President, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you. Agenda item C, board purpose statement. The board meeting statement of purpose, a license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item D, declarations of conflicts of interest, if any, for this meeting. Are there any conflicts of interest among the board members for the upcoming complaints? Okay, I see none. Agenda item E, president's report. I have no report today. Agenda item F.
Madam President?
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting. I would like the record to reflect that Dr. Stephen Cohen appeared at 8:02 a.m. after roll call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Agenda item F, number one, J. Daniel Twelker, IR number 202319. Actually, before we start on this, let me just say that as this is telephonic or virtual, any of the attendees today, please preface your comments with your name first so that everyone knows who's speaking. And when referring to a patient, please only use their initials. And let's see here, with Dr. Twelker's complaint, IR number 202319, is patient PW present? Okay. Is Dr. Twelker present?
Your Honor, this is Kathleen Rogers, the counsel for Dr. Twelker. I don't see him on the participant, and I know he was supposed to be there. What I think happened is the letter that was sent has a different meeting ID and passcode than what's on the agenda on the website. So I need to, if it's okay, try to get a hold of him.
Move on to another complaint. I was under the impression you had a time conflict and
I just noticed that there's inconsistencies between the letter and the what's on the website, and I was trying to reach out to Dr. Twelker. I do have a 9 o'clock hearing in Superior Court, but if you're Madam President could allow me just a few moments to try to contact him, I would appreciate it.
Okay.
I'll resend the link. I apologize for that, Ms. Rogers.
Okay. So I guess just go to the next one, and I'm going to try to copy him right now or get a hold of him right now.
Okay. All right. So we'll go forward to agenda item F2, Dr. Chad McKinney, IR number 202404. Is patient SL present? And counsel for Dr. McKinney? And Dr. McKinney, I see that you've signed on.
Yes.
Okay. First, could we get a board summary regarding Dr. McKinney's complaint?
This is Dr. Mestaros. I can do it. So this is IR number 202404. Dr. McKinney, the patient is SL. The exam was done on August 11th of this year. Then the patient's complaint is that there was a refusal to give the prescription and they did not complete the exam. So the patient states that they had a drastic change in their vision when they presented for the exam. And so the doctor suspected that she might have diabetes, and he said he could not give her the prescription because it would be pointless. She reports that he did not make eye contact and other maybe miscommunications. She went for a second appointment and did receive a prescription from another doctor with a less prescription change. So after looking at the notes, we see that there was about a 2 diopter change in the prescription that Dr. McKinney got at that visit. He reports that he educated her on diabetes and blood sugar and advised that the prescription was pending as she was to get a primary care visit, and then he would follow up and get her RX after that was done. That is my summary. Thank you.
Dr. Mestaros. Dr. McKinney, if you would like to address the board, yes, this is your opportunity. I'll just confirm patient SL is still not present, correct? Okay, so then Dr. McKinney, if you'd like to address the board, this is your opportunity.
Yes, patient came in. She says about a month ago, she had a drastic change in vision and she couldn't see out of her glasses anymore. I did a refraction, there's a 2 diopter difference. I started asking her if she had any other symptoms. She reports that, this is in the record, that she's noticing she's been really thirsty lately, which is, you know, a red flag for me. So I discussed how I was concerned that she could have elevated blood sugar and that I wanted to have that checked before we finalized the prescription. I thought it was in the best interest of her overall health to make sure that wasn't what was causing the change in the prescription. She seemed fine with that. She didn't have any concerns or questions. And I'm not sure where the miscommunication was.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. This will conclude open discussion, and I'll open this up now for board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I can share a few things. Just as I reviewed everything, that is quite unusual to have a 2 diopter hyperopic shift like that. So I think it's not the type of shift, the direction of shift that we normally see with diabetes, but certainly within the realm of possibility that there's something going on, could be diabetes. You can get a hyperopic shift with diabetes. And so I agree, probably more investigation needs to be done to figure out what's going on there. Be interesting to know, had she been, I think she was around a minus three early, you know, historically. It'd be interesting to know, has she always been that, or was she typically more like the 150 and it had swung up to that in recent years? But anyhow, certainly some more information investigation would be prudent. So I don't see anything wrong with the plan or the method of care. Get the blood sugar check, see if anything else is going on. From a patient satisfaction standpoint, it would be hard to function with that big of a shift in her current glasses. And so sometimes in that situation, depending on how the patient's doing, you know, we would still go ahead and update the glasses so they can function while we get this figured out, whether it's diabetes, whether we need to do other, you know, macular testing, just to see what's causing this shift. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Other thoughts from the board members?
This is Dr. Brown. May I ask Dr. McKinney if at the end of the exam, was there any request for the prescription before she left?
There wasn't. I took her out front to the opticians and I didn't want to say out loud that, oh, I think she has diabetes. That would be a HIPAA violation. So I took her out and I told the optician that we're not going to do glasses today. She's going to follow up with us and then we'll do the prescription then. She didn't say anything. She didn't give any indication that she didn't understand what we were doing or why we were doing it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Does that conclude your comments, Dr. Brown?
That does conclude my comments.
Okay. Other comments from board members?
Yes. Hi, this is Dr. Cohen. Dr. McKinney, in your response, you commented about that you wanted to consult. You said my treatment plan was to consult with patients' PCP. Was that you were saying in there that the patient was going to consult or that you were planning to communicate directly with the PCP?
What we discussed is that she would go ahead and schedule that blood sugar workup with her primary care doctor. And then once he gave her clearance, then she would follow up with me.
Thank you.
Dr. Mastores, any comments?
Yes, Dr. Mastores. When I read this, I felt like I would have maybe done the same thing. Just with that big shift in vision, I would have been suspicious. So I don't see any violation here.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comments.
Thank you. So I'll just say my impressions of this case just for Dr. McKinney's benefit. I've never had a diabetic present with a hyperopic shift, always a myopic shift. I agree it's suspicious when you see a diopter and a half hyperopic shift. It could potentially have been that the previous glasses prescription though was erroneous. And then you're looking to delay the patient. And they could be 3 months before they could get in with their primary to get this checked out. And meanwhile, then they have all this eye strain and difficulty. So I probably would not have handled it that way myself. I probably would have issued the prescription with an explanation that this is quite different from before. You know, this is somewhat odd. Make sure once you get the glasses, if you have any concerns, come back and see me right away. And then I might have said, you know, maybe check in with your primary and make sure that things are okay. But when you have a high blood sugar spike and you're carrying around high blood sugars, you tend to get more nearsighted, not farsighted. So this would imply better systemic control of blood sugars, not worse control of blood sugar. So that was my impression. And those are my thoughts with regard to this case. I think it sounds pretty much so that everyone feels there's been no violation of the Optometric Practice Act here. Is that my read on the room, so to speak? Okay.
Madam President, excuse me for interrupting. Could you just ask the person on Keith's iPhone which complaint they're here for? I want to make sure we don't miss the complaint in this case.
Okay. So the person who signed in under Keith's iPhone, you're not the patient in this complainant, are you? Are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm Keith Lanford. I have a volunteer application before the board.
Oh, gotcha. Thank you. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So would someone like to, and then Dr. McKinney, I made some comments directed to you. Do you have any response? You don't have to, but I thought I'd give you an opportunity if you wanted to reply.
I think that I believe in the past I have seen a hyperopic shift, although it's not as common. I still thought it was possible, especially with her complaints that she'd been really thirsty lately. I thought that was really something that kind of put me over the edge. But I do understand what you're saying, that probably just give her the script anyway so she's not dealing with the change. And then if we got to remake it, we got to remake it. But certainly I wasn't just withholding the prescription.
Okay, all right. Would anyone like to make a motion?
Dr. Brown, I move that we dismiss this complaint.
Is there a second?
This is Dr. Cohen, I second.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Brown, are you dismissing it for lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act?
I'm dismissing it for lack of the violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, do you still second that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the violation, or to dismiss the complaint against Dr. McKinney for any violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Let's see here. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you. And Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. We'll go back now to the complaint against Dr. Daniel Twelker, IR number 202319. Is patient PW present? I still have no. Dr. Twelker, I believe you are present. I see you there.
I'm present. And
I think we also have counsel Kathleen Rogers, correct?
Yes, I'm present, but Dr. Twelker will take the floor.
Okay. So we'll start with a board summary. Would one of the board members like to offer a summary, please, in Dr. Twelker's complaint?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I'll be happy to do so.
Thank you.
This concerns patient PW, who was seen on January 31st, earlier this year, had an appointment, was under the impression had an appointment with an ophthalmologist who's supposedly specialized in strabismus. There was a mix-up within the Banner system about the appointment because it was set up with Dr. Swanson at one office, but Dr. Twelker was about 11 miles away in another office. sent him to Dr. Twelker's office and he fit him into his schedule. And there was a concern with the amount of prism in his glasses. And Dr. Twelker came up with measurements, but requested prior records and prior prescription to determine what the current prescription had as far as prism, and got that and then made a small modification from there. Patient PW is upset about the way the situation had been handled, both with the scheduling and then also felt that Dr. Twelker didn't demonstrate expertise in this area because he was saying that, well, we're not sure what the prism will be, and suggested he go to Costco to get it because they had a more liberal remake policy. According to Dr. Twelker, he measured the prism and educated the patient that there's a difference between the art and science of prescribing prism and that it can change, and that that's why the recommendation was made to go somewhere in case a modification was required. The patient then said that he made an appointment with another doctor in town that specialized in strabismus and didn't want to pay the remaining balance of about $122. And requested that Dr. Twelker apparently put in a request through Banner for that, but he's not in charge of the billing situation. And apparently Banner felt that the service had been provided and therefore there would be no refund to the patient.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. All right, so Dr. Twelker, would you like to address the board? This is your opportunity to do so.
Good morning. From my point of view,
the issue here is that I was actually in communication with the patient in the weeks after the eye exam, and we had talked on the phone, and he was leaving messages at the with my assistant, and I was returning those messages. So I felt like we had a pretty good line of communication through my assistant, and also in actually picking up the phone and talking with the patient. And I also felt like I explained the process, which was that we would almost certainly be doing a follow-up exam, and also we might need to adjust the prescription. So there's one thing detail that I just want to add. My understanding is that the patient went to Costco and was told that they couldn't do the spectacles because it had too much prism. And I did actually, before I released the prescription, I asked about the quantity of prism that they could do. And I was told that they could do up to 6 diopters, prism diopters in each eye. What I was not told, and where I feel like I did make a mistake, is that that the 6 diopters total is not in the horizontal or vertical, it's total. And what I had prescribed was 6 prism diopters in each eye, plus some vertical prism. So it tipped the scales, and Costco said they couldn't do it. And so I completely understand why the patient would be upset or disillusioned or not understand what was going on. But what I would have recommended, if I had been able to understand that there was a problem, is that the patient simply contact me again and simply let me know that there was a problem on the material side, on the glasses production side, so that I could address it. And what I would have done is I would have recommended that he come drive a little farther to our office, where I know our optician could have made those glasses. But what happened is that the patient became upset. The patient decided that he just wanted to forget the whole thing and go somewhere else. So I will also say that we have a clinic director who would have been happy to have heard this case and would have been happy to try to address the issues. And at Banner, we also have patient relations liaisons, representatives, who are happy to negotiate between the patient and the doctor to come up with a resolution. But unfortunately, what happened is that when we found out about the complaint, Banner did not follow those avenues, but assigned counsel. So, and that's actually my initial reaction, was just to deal with this with you all directly. But once Banner found out, and the reason why they found out is because I asked for the refund. I asked them to please refund the $122 to the patient, and they said no. So that's what happened from my perspective. I wish I would have been given the chance to remedy the issue about getting the glasses made.
Thank you, Dr. Twelker. Okay, so this concludes open discussion. Unless, Ms. Rogers, you have any comments you'd like to contribute?
I have nothing to add, thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. So this concludes open discussion, and we'll open this up for board discussion now. Any comments from the board members?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. I totally understand where the miscommunication could occur, and it's often difficult to communicate when it comes to prism and the dynamic aspect of that. It gives the appearance that the patient PW is already quite upset about the situation because the mishap in the scheduling, that this might have been sort of the final straw of it. But I failed to see anything Dr. Twelker did, including, I think, being extra conservative in his approach to compare it to a verification of the amount of prism prior to that, to see if maybe some modification can be made, which falls into the art of prescribing prism. So I failed to see any violation of the requirements here.
Thank you. Other comments?
This is Dr. Mastoris. I completely agree with Dr. Cohen. I also, when prescribing prism, will try to get the old prescription because it's difficult to read it off glasses. So it's really nice to have the old prescription available. And I think Dr. Twelker did everything that he could do for this patient. And it definitely was a miscommunication and a bunch of errors that occurred that put maybe a perspective in the patient's mind that kind of went south, but I don't think there was any violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Other comments?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I would just say, I just agree with what's being said. It looks like from start to finish, Dr. Twelker provided really good service. I wish the patient was on the call so we could explain a little bit more about PRISM and how these are common challenges that are dealt with when we're dealing with PRISM.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Other comments?
Dr. Brown, I agree with all comments.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Any comments? Okay, I hear none. I'm going to offer my own comments. I say this just for the benefit of the patient if he were to listen in. So I have frequently seen a patient scheduled with someone who doesn't offer or address double vision and have to get rescheduled. And so as inconvenient as that is, it's also inconvenient to see a doctor for a service that they don't offer. And so of course this doesn't make Dr. Twelker responsible for this, that the patient was rescheduled with him. I think he took him on a triage basis into a full clinic, and that's always difficult to do. My impression when it comes to the service Dr. Twelker offered is that he went above and beyond. I don't usually call the lab and find out the amount of PRISM that they will address. I've had much larger prescriptions than what Dr. Twelker prescribed, and the patient just has to go to a different lab. Those are lab requirements, individual lab requirements, and so they may limit how much PRISM that they do, but that doesn't mean that that PRISM amount was somehow too large to address. It didn't look anywhere near concerning amounts to me as far as the amplitude of PRISM used and whether a lab would fill it or not. So I thought that was kind of above and beyond that you called the Costco lab to check on that. The patient could have gone to another dispensary. And I do think it's unfortunate because PRISM is difficult. It's difficult to address. It's not always predictable. And so I thought Dr. Twelker did a really good job here. So I also see no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Would anyone like to offer a motion in this complaint?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I move that we dismiss this complaint against Dr. Twelker as there's been no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll second that.
Thank you. So we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Twelker, as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Any further discussion? Okay, so we will vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote? I'm gonna move forward. Dr. Brown, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote? Motion passes 5-0. We will move on to agenda item F3, Dr. Kendra Koonigan, IR number 202405. Is patient AC present? Dr. Koonigan, I see you're present.
Yes, yes, this is Kendra Koonigan.
Oh,
good to meet you all. No worries. Thank you.
And do you have counsel with you today?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Can I get a board summary in Dr. Koonigan's case?
This is Dr. Brown. I've prepared a small summary. Okay. Patient AC missed her one-day follow-up after LASIK surgery. Her complaint seems to stem from communications before and after that. It seems to be that it's disappointing that the patient's communication breakdown between the two interactions can be so different. but I cannot discern which one is most valid, and I don't see any violation of the Optometric Act.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Cunningham, if you'd like to take an opportunity or take a chance to discuss this, this is your time.
Sorry, yes. I did send in a kind of a lengthy discussion trying to explain what the perceptions of the patient were. Apparently, the patient had some concerns and complaints prior to meeting me and prior to really having an exam with me. I think it's unfortunate that she had misconceptions and also unfortunate that she didn't speak to any member of the team if she just for some reason felt uncomfortable or felt that I was inadequate as provider, didn't ask to see one of the other providers in the practice. It was the complaint, like he said, it was very, very detailed, but a lot of things stem from before or after meeting me. She didn't have any complaints about my medical care. She didn't have any complaints about her interaction with me at her one day fall for her first eye. She just was concerned or upset that I reached out to her at her missed one day follow-up and tried to encourage her to come in. As a provider, I've seen a lot of patients who miss their one day and have, you know, unfortunately, those rare complications that can happen after LASIK, and wanted her to come in so we can make sure she's safe. And I feel like that's my duty as a provider to communicate that. But she perceived that as different. And so I think it's just unfortunate that she not only saw or had misperceptions prior to meeting me, but also did not attend her follow-up appointment to ensure that she had safe and adequate care.
Does this conclude your comments, Dr. Cunningham?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll open this up then for a board discussion. Comments from the board?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I have no concerns about the care that the patient AC received. Obviously, from the get-go, there were some negative impressions she had about the clinic or the initial charges. But anyway, she details everything. We've all read it. But I feel like she received excellent care. And this is just one of those times where, for whatever reason, personalities conflicted. But I don't see any violations or any shortcomings in her care.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. This is Dr. Mava. I have some questions for Dr. Cunningham. So Dr. Cunningham, do you remember shushing the patient?
So I actually asked my husband about this when this did come up. We're high school sweethearts. We've been together for 20 years. And I asked him if he's ever heard me use the word shush. And he is not, because that's not a word in my vocabulary. There are, you know, if we are at home, I might tell him to hold on or something. That might be a word that I would use with the patient, but no, I wouldn't have shushed a patient. I don't actually use that word in general in life. So that definitely would not have happened because that's not a verb, that's not my verbiage. But then in addition to that, she was saying that scenario at the front desk, which I would not have been assisting with financial concerns at the front desk. That's not something that I do as a rule as an optometrist in the surgical practice, being the sole optometrist. So I'm not sure if she perhaps confused me with someone else, because this would have been prior to her actually attending a one-day follow appointment with me or being introduced to me. We do have two staff at the front desk, but I really don't have any other way to speculate other than I would assume that she may have confused someone else or honestly may not be honest. I'm not really sure. I've never heard my staff say that either.
Okay. I'll give you my impression of this just as I read it, that our behavior when we're interacting with patients does have to be at a higher level maybe than the patient is held to, obviously, and that our behavior can be misconstrued as unprofessional and we can get a violation in the Optometric Practice Act if we're not professional in the way that we interact with our patients. In this instance, it's hard to tell because it's just two very different stories. So the only reason I'm bringing this up is just that if perchance this is a, you know, we all have our moments when we get a little short on patience and we have to remind ourselves that, you know, we have to take the high road and the way that we talk and interact. I just mean this as a reminder. That's all. That's the reason I would bring that up. Any other comments from board members?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen, and I agree strongly with what you just said, Dr. Moffitt. I always discuss the difference between intent and impact. The intent of what I'm saying right now has little to do with the impact it may have on everyone listening, because that's based on their own filters and biases and prior experiences. The one thing I found in the notes that I thought was telling in terms of the patient responsibility is that the patient said that had taken melatonin to be able to make sure eyes were closed as long as possible and missed the appointment and then was called repeatedly by LASIK Plus office to check on that because they recognized the importance of that one day follow-up. And I mean, after missing the appointment, the patient went for a run and didn't call to apologize or to reschedule or see what might be done having overslept. But, and then there were repeated calls coming from LASIK Plus. I feel as if not only Dr. Cunningham, but also the office was responsible, did a responsible job in making sure the patient got the needed follow-up care. And the patient does bear, while the way we communicate is critical, the patient does bear some responsibility here as well.
I agree with your comments, Dr. Cohen. Any other comments from board members? Would anyone like to offer a motion? I guess not. So I would move that we dismiss the complaint against Dr. Cunningham for lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Is there a second?
Dr. Brown, I second it.
Any further discussion? Okay, so there's been a motion to dismiss for lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act against Dr. Cunningham. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote? Dr. Brown, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Madam Chair, let the record reflect I vote aye.
Okay, thank you. Motion passes 6-0. All right, I'm moving on to agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of non-disciplinary order. Number one, Shane Sanders, OD related IR number 202312. So Dr. Sanders submitted 5 continuing education credits for ocular disease to satisfy his non-disciplinary board order for CE. Any discussion or concern regarding whether this satisfies the order?
Dr. Brown, I have an observation of his reply.
Okay.
In it, he says he takes exception with the phrasing of lack of understanding of treatment of posterior segment disease. And I tend to agree that not dilating doesn't necessarily indicate lack of understanding of treatment of posterior segment disease. So I don't know if we can adjust the order or not. But I'm not sure that lack of understanding by not dilating is inferred. So I agree with his concern. That's my comments.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Brown. So instead of lack of understanding, what would it be considered? I think that's what the board did issue the letter for, but.
So in the, I'm sorry, Dr. Brown, let me just pull it up. It says for failing to meet standard of care due to not dilating over 6 years, you could put period and just not have and lacking understanding in the treatment of diseases. You could leave that last part of the sentence off and it would still stand as an order. That's my opinion. I'm just...
Well, I appreciate the feedback, and I understand that somehow implies something different is what he's saying and what you're agreeing with. So,
yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam President.
Okay. I'll offer my comments in that, too. I understand that he's maybe insulted by the phraseology of that. And I guess I get that, but I also feel like if you fail to dilate someone over a 6-year period and they have underlying disease, as they did in this case, to me, that does look like that you're not communicating to your patient the importance of the need for dilation. And you're failing to execute your responsibilities as their provider. You can't find something that you're not looking for. And none of us go to our primary care physician and say, hello, I have this problem. I want you to only do this, but you can't do this. And then I'm pretty sure most of the time they would argue with us and say, if I'm to do my job, I have to do this. And it looked like in his case, there was never a conversation or a discussion about the importance of dilation and what could potentially be being missed. And so I understand the, the insult and the lack of understanding, but it does suggest an ambivalence, I suppose, towards the health of the patient's eye. If you fail to communicate and you fail to execute a full eye exam over a 6-year period. So I understand your comments, Dr. Brown, and I do appreciate them. And I appreciated where Dr. Sanders was coming from also. And maybe we could be more articulate in our phraseology. However, generally, that was what we thought. That was what I thought. So those were my thoughts. Any other comments on this?
This is Dr. Carpenter. Yeah, I understand what's being said by both you and Dr. Brown. I tend to agree with Dr. Brown. I mean, as far as I think at this point, he's met the requirements. So I think it's something we can move on from and just pay attention to in the future.
Other comments?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. My only concern in terms of how we might be more sensitized to that going forward is, does this wind up showing up on Dr. Sanders' record showing that the complaint include a lack of understanding of the treatment of posterior segment disease? Does it?
Yeah, I think it's a no because it was a non-disciplinary order.
Okay. Well, thank you.
This is Dr. Carpenter. Yeah, Dr. Cohen brings up a really good point. Yeah, I wouldn't want this to follow him through his career with that language in there, or if he tried to go to another state or something, but you're saying it would not. It wouldn't come up.
Correct. Okay. This was, I think, just meant to reinforce the things, at least my recollection of our conversation at the time, this was to reinforce what can be missed in the back of the eye when you're not looking. And so that's why the CE order was done. And in my opinion, it's appropriate. I think that there are lots of patients who don't want to be dilated, and I understand the inconvenience of it, but I'm not sure why that's become a norm among some doctors to allow for that. If you have a high-risk patient, someone over the age of 60, I think the patient had a history of retinal detachment. There was a lot of other stuff, and there was no discussion about patient being dilated. To me, it seems a little irresponsible. So that's where I was on that. Okay, so the question was in the beginning, are there any concerns about these 5 continuing education credits satisfying the order?
This is Dr. Brown. I think he satisfied the order.
Okay, great. Other comments from the board, Dr. Cohen?
I agree. I see that this met the requirement.
Okay, Dr. Mestores? All right, she gave us a thumbs up. Dr. Carpenter?
Yes, I believe it's satisfied.
Okay, and Mr. Hamed?
I do agree, it has been satisfied.
Okay, I also agree. So would someone like to make a motion to accept these 5 continuing education credits to satisfy the non-disciplinary order against Dr. Sanders?
And also to terminate it at that time, Madam President.
Thank you, and to terminate the order.
This is Dr. Carpenter, I'll give it a shot. I move to accept these 5 additional CE credits in order to satisfy and to terminate the non-disciplinary action.
That's good.
Okay. I'll stop.
Is there a second?
This is Dr. Cohen. I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. So we'll vote. We've had a motion that these 5CE credits satisfy and terminate the order related to IR number 202312, Dr. Shane Sanders. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Okay, great. Dr. Brown, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license by endorsement applications. Number one, Dr. Martin Storbeck. Dr. Storbeck has a few previous disciplinary actions. Are there any concerns about issuing Dr. Storbeck an Arizona license? Is it appropriate to ask Dr. Storbeck if he wants to take a minute and address the board? Margaret, can I do that since he's present or no?
Yes, Madam President, I think that would be appropriate.
So Dr. Storbeck, since you're here, if you wanted to take a minute and address any comments towards the board, you're welcome to do so.
Good morning, everybody. This is Martin Storbeck. Thank you for looking at my application. And while yes, I agree there are some early disciplinary actions, I've learned from them and have spent over the last 20 plus years trying to make sure that I've become a better doctor and have worked hard towards helping my patients. And I hope to be able to continue to do that in the great state of Arizona. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Storbeck. All right, so comments from the board members, any concerns about Dr. Storbeck's license application here in Arizona? Two previous disciplinary actions, I think in the 90s.
Yes, this is Dr. Conan. That's the point that I raised. I appreciate Dr. Storbeck's comment that trying to be a better doctor and learning from it, but the most recent violation is over 25 years ago. So I don't feel there's any current concern, and I appreciated being forthcoming about it and owning up to that this was a learning opportunity for him from these actions taken previously.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. I think that was well said. Other comments from the board?
Dr. Mastores here, I completely agree. Thank you.
Other comments? Dr. Carpenter?
Yeah, this is Dr. Carpenter. I agree with what's been said, and yes, and it doesn't appear the violations necessarily had a lot to do with patient care and patient safety.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Dr. Brown?
I agree with the comments.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed?
I agree as well.
Thank you. I also agree. I appreciate your comments, Dr. Storbeck. I don't have any concerns about Dr. Storbeck obtaining an Arizona license. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Carr. I move that we accept Dr. Storbeck's application and welcome him to the great state of Arizona.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I'll second it.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Any further discussion? All right, we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Storbeck's Arizona application for licensure. And let's see, how do we vote? Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you. Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Agenda item I, review, discussion, and possible action on application for volunteer health services under ARS 32-3217. Dr. Keith Linford. Dr. Linford, so we're going to discuss your application in just a moment. I'll give you a chance to address the board if you'd like. So, Dr. Linford submitted a volunteer request to work at Sunshine Acres for 10 days. However, his current license is a restricted license to volunteer only. I think it was in Utah. And the Arizona statute clearly states the license has to be active and unrestricted. So before we have further discussion about this, Dr. Linford, would you like to address the board?
Okay, I think we're good now.
Yes, we can.
I've retired about 8 years ago from Utah from active practice. I was in private practice for 30 years and joined the medical group the last 10 years as a partner. Since retiring, I've done a lot of volunteer work throughout Utah and international, Mexico, Honduras. Just got back from Uganda on my third trip. So we've had a, when I got out of school a bunch of years ago, I actually had an Arizona license for a year or two. I was debating whether to go down and practice there. We had a lot of family there. But anyway, we've done is 3 years ago, we bought a little two-room condo down in Mesa, East Mesa on Higley. And Sunshine Acres is up the trail there on Higley by the 202. And so we went in and talked and found out some of their issues. And I thought, well, maybe I could help there a few times a year. Give them a little assistance and provide some care and emergency care, perhaps. So that's kind of my intent. I would be tickled to have a license there to be able to assist to that point that I'm not after the dollar. I'm just after some service to provide. There is a restriction in Utah law about supervision, and it's been there a long time. To be honest with you, I've never used it, and I don't know how whether it really applies to the real world. I think I understand why it's there. In case we get old and foggy and in trouble, at least there's a mechanism to limit it. But there's been no questions asked about that in my licensure at all, and I've renewed it twice. So anyway, that's kind of a nutshell where I'm at and what I'm interested in. Be tickled to work under the same supervision in Arizona or continue what I've done in Utah as well. So that's kind of what this is all about. So I appreciate your understanding and would appreciate your approval on the volunteer application.
Thank you, Dr. Linford. So I think that one of the important things for the board to understand is that it looks like the Utah license for a volunteer has restrictions on it. And the Arizona statute states clearly that you have to have an unrestricted license to obtain a volunteer license here. And so I think we'd love to have you, Dr. Linford, but I think our hands are tied in the way the statute is written. That's my interpretation. Margaret, would you like to take an opportunity to discuss this with the board?
Yes, Madam President, thank you. Members of the board, so this is a situation where it's really about the way our law is written. The law does say that it is has to be a fully active license in the other state, which the volunteer license in Utah is considered an active license, but the restriction that we're actually talking about is the supervisory requirement. That is a really unfortunate requirement for any license. As I had mentioned in previous conversations with Dr. Moffitt, you know, through disciplinary orders in the past here in our state, we have tried to require it and it just isn't a feasible option because no OD wants to supervise another OD. It's just not a thing. We don't supervise other, you know, colleagues. So I think at this point, you know, the board's only option really would be to allow Dr. Linford to maybe withdraw the application as opposed to an outright denial, because that's still reportable as a disciplinary action, which of course we don't want. This is sort of an administrative issue, but we don't have any administrative denial or anything like that. So it would have to be just not taking action or not accepting the application and just asking him to maybe consider withdrawing his application at this time. The only way I think to offer up a solution for Dr. Linford, which probably isn't really a solution since he's been retired 8 years, would be to reactivate the Utah license as a whole, the initial license, and then he could certainly volunteer here.
Dr. Linford, do you have any thoughts about what Margaret just said?
Yes, I am not in a position, or I do not desire to reactivate my Utah license. It's pretty sweet for what I'm doing in Utah and internationally. It's unfortunate the administrative law is such. There is no options for exemption in that position or not under the law.
Madam President, members of the board, to answer your question, Dr. Linford, we do not have authority to waive our statutes or rules in any way. So, I mean, that wouldn't be an option, unfortunately. And I'm just, if I may, I'm very sorry that we're having this discussion because, of course, we want you here as a volunteer and as a volunteer optometrist. So this is a really unfortunate situation. The law did not come from the optometry board. This is a general health occupation law that applies to all the professions, not just us. So, you know, we don't get to say.
What and what, Dan? I got you.
That's all I can offer up, Madam President.
Thank you, Margaret. So, Dr. Linford, would you rather withdraw your application?
Well, it's not going to be approved. I don't know if there's any value in maintaining it. I mean, if that's your recommendation, then I guess that's the end of the game, I suppose. A little disappointing, obviously, because I do have some real interest in helping those people there. So maybe I'll just do it more discreetly, or maybe just limit what I can do for them in a role, and no prescribing or no issues of that nature. So I'll figure it out. So sure, I'll go ahead and consider it withdrawn then at this point.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Linford.
Sure.
Okay, so it looks as Dr. Linford is withdrawing his application, then we'll just move forward on the agenda.
Yes, I'm very sad about that, Madam President.
Agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports, request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. There is number one, number two, number three, licensees awaiting fingerprint reports at this time. Is there any concern about approving these applications for licensure?
Madam President, excuse me if I may. Agenda J2 and J3, we just got the reports back yesterday. But I had already posted my agenda, so I couldn't change it. So if you would just withdraw those from consideration, and we would only be asking for J1, Philip Barlow.
Okay. So we will not discuss J2 and J3 as their fingerprint reports came in. And then with regard to applicant Philip Barlow on the agenda J1, any concern about approving this applicant for licensure while still awaiting his fingerprint reports?
Madam President, members of the board, I just would like to also add that Dr. Barlow does not have any disclosures of any kind on his application, so we are not expecting any results from the fingerprint report.
Thank you, Margaret. Any comments from the board members? Dr. Cohen, any comments?
No comments, I agree.
Okay, Dr. Brown?
I'm happy to move this forward.
Approve his license. Dr. Mastores?
I agree.
Okay. Dr. Carpenter?
Yes, no concerns.
Okay, Mr. Hamed?
I vote yes.
Okay, well, we're not voting yet, but we will in just a moment.
I have no problem with it, so I'm fine with approving it.
Gotcha. I have no concerns about approving Dr. Barlow's application. So would anyone like to make a motion?
Dr. Brown, I move we approve the license.
Of Dr. Philip Barlow?
Of Dr. Philip Barlow. Without the fingerprint reports. Thank you, sorry.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Carpenter, I'll second it.
Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to approve Dr. Philip Barlow's licensure for application while still awaiting fingerprint reports. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Yes.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. So motion passes 6-0. Agenda item K, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. Agenda items 1A through 1P were approved in the August 1 through October 4th, 2023 time period. Agenda item L, review, discussion, and possible action on applications for continuing education pursuant to ARS 32-1704D and AAC R4-21-210. So Dr. Dan Still submitted the CE titled Interventional Glaucoma Care in Pseudophakic Patient by the American Vision Partners. It's offered synchronously via Zoom. It's one credit hour and the date is December 5th, 2023. Any concerns or discussion regarding this potential class as CE?
This is Dr. Carpenter. I reviewed the outline and the slides and everything looks really good. I have no concerns.
Thank you. Dr. Mestores, any concerns?
Nope. I also agree. It looks great.
Dr. Brown?
I thought it was very thorough and I liked it.
Okay. Dr. Cohen?
I agree. I thought it's a lot of information packed into a 1 hour lecture.
Good. Me too. I thought it looked pretty good. So would anyone like to make a motion to approve this continuing education?
Dr. Brown, I move that we approve this continuing education. Do I need to read out the title?
No.
I have to find it.
Margaret Maybe. Says no.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and then is there a second?
Dr. Carpenter, I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to approve Dr. Dan Still's continuing education submission for one credit hour on December 5th, 2023. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Great. Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Agenda item M, Executive Director's Report. I'll hand this over to Margaret.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. Our budget update, item number one. As a reminder, our fiscal year 24 appropriation is $289,200. As a reminder, the appropriation is what we actually are authorized to spend out of our cash balance. As of August 31st of this year, our beginning cash balance was $576,835 with an ending cash balance of $573,709. So we do have a healthy cash balance at this time. Hopefully it will stay that way. 25% of this fiscal year, which began July 1st, has elapsed with the board spending at 17%. So I feel like our budget's in good shape so far. The Thentia e-licensing platform update, item number two. Our system launched on July 1st. We had a blackout period the last week of June, where all of our data and everything was migrated off the Salesforce platform into Thentia. And it's been a challenge, to be honest with you. We've had some serious data migration issues that are not the agency's fault because we don't do programming and data and all that kind of thing. So we've been working closely with the Department of Administration, ASSET group it's called, and they are working on the data migration issues overall. We had some specific issues where people who were licensed in 2022 and so far this year in 2023 prior to the changeover were also not migrated at all, no profiles. So we've been working on those. And then the OGs, the licensees who've been licensed for a while in Arizona, are missing various data, like mainly social security numbers did not migrate over. So we're also, that's a recent issue that we found. So we're looking at those as well and working with Thentia. We kind of have a master list of issues for items that are not resolved with the online system. So Ms. Becker and I have been working diligently with Ventia. And I would also like to add that Ms. Becker is phenomenal at the Ventia system so far and recognizing issues and reporting them. She actually made the master list. So I just wanted to say kudos to her. That has been such a big help to me because I have other job duties, as you know. And so the licensing stuff, I've been very grateful to her for sort of handling these Ventia issues. We are having weekly meetings, probably 2 to 3 times per week with Ventia to just kind of keep going over tons of support tickets. I think from the user side, which is all of you licensees, you hopefully haven't noticed too many if you've already gone on and renewed your license in the last few months. We've had a couple outliers here and there where people just couldn't get on, they couldn't get logged in, they weren't receiving the password resets and things like that. So not to worry, we're not spending any extra money because I always will fight for that from the fact that we are not getting what we had in our contract. So so far I haven't had to ask for any extra monies in our budget. And because the system was not kicked off last year when I did have the extra funding that was requested and granted for the FY23, it was moved to fiscal year 24. So that was about $7,800. So that's also helpful to offset our appropriations so they don't spend monies that we actually need on monies that should have been spent last fiscal year. So,
Ms. Whalen, hi, this is Dr. Cohen. If I might interject, I just renewed my license in the last couple of weeks, and I thought the process to do it online was very efficient and very thorough. And I thought it a really good system in place.
Oh, thank you. And Ventia is an excellent system. I didn't mean to imply that it wasn't. It's just that we had to launch because of the end of the fiscal year for financial purposes. So we're sort of backing into it, if you will, because the system wasn't 100% complete. Programming wise when we kicked over, but we were assured that the front end users wouldn't notice too much. So I think Fawn and I are just suffering a little bit on the back end. plus it's a little, you know, challenging to learn a new system. So that's always an issue.
Ms. Whalen, if I may comment, I'm glad that Dr. Cohen had a great experience. It took me 3 or 4 times to log in and then help from Ms. Becker to finally get in. Apparently there's a few Robert Browns out there, and we've had 2 new doctors struggle to get their licenses and get credentialed with the process. Nothing wrong with the office. They've been very responsive and every time we've called, but there's definitely some struggles out there, but the help that we've received has been very responsive, very good. And we appreciate the hard work and can't imagine the stress that's probably being incurred in your office during this time.
Thank you for your comments. And to us, there's only one Dr. Brown. So, but I do appreciate those comments and we were aware, but I'm super happy that you are getting the help that you needed. That's kind of my goal. I mean, if we can't fix it, at least we can help it, hopefully. And we do have the ear of the programmers. So that's very helpful. When we get issues, usually Ms. Becker and I are not able to resolve it because it's a programming issue, but we put a support ticket in and they're pretty responsive. So hopefully in the next month or two, this will all be settled. So my next report should be like, Ventia is awesome. item number 3 on my report, there's a new GPS portal for licensure. It's amazing. We actually had a 90-10 directors meeting on Wednesday this week. And I had invited DPS to present on their new portal because we get emails from them saying that they are updating and upgrading their fingerprinting process, because as you know, since you approve licenses like today, Dr. Barlow, it can take them, you know, upwards of 16 weeks. Fingerprints get lost, they're non-discernible, they can't be read. So the new DPS portal is all electronic, and it's to do electronic fingerprints, security clearance cards, and the digital fingerprints. So it's for employees, volunteers, state agencies, and applicants. So they've had a very, very big overhaul of their system. It's still improving, and there is a contract right now with FieldPrint. I don't know, you may or may not have heard Ms. Becker or I mentioned them, but FieldPrint was an outside third party that was contracted with DPS to do fingerprints from anywhere in the country. And somewhere along the line, a couple of months ago, they came forward and said, we can only do people who live in Arizona. I think there was a security issue. So that kind of quashed all of our hopes and dreams for quicker licensure at that time. But I just wanted to point out that DPS is aware. I had sent them an email, you know, letting them know how devastating it was to lose field print for out-of-state applicants. I said 99.9% of our people are out-of-state. We only get the Midwestern kids when they graduate. So that's a very small pool. But DPS is aware, and they're hoping to renegotiate that in their contract. Something I learned is that FBI is very particular and very statutorily driven as well on how they are able to do fingerprinting. So there's some state agencies that are still waiting to get on board with fingerprinting, and FBI is still processing applications from 2020, not fingerprint applications, but applications for the authority to fingerprint. So I could see where there'd be some issues. But also one of my points for the new DPS portal is that it's super, super quick. So if an applicant is able to use it, we get the results back like in the next 3 days. So I think when DPS is able to finally do their next upgrade, which I think they said was in November, hopefully we'll see a lot quicker turnarounds. So our licensure should be even more expedient, which I'm really excited about. Item number four, staff activity. I greatly apologize, but I will not be reporting on that today. So due to said issues with Ventia, we don't have any reports at this time, or we're not capable of reporting. That's kind of a lower priority for Ventia, which I'm okay with at this time, I guess, to an extent. So hopefully by December, I will be able to report, and I'll break it down by month so you can kind of see the staff activity from May to December. So I apologize for that. But I mean, we have been processing applications, as you know, and I think in my earlier agenda item, you can see the applicants under item K1. So I just don't have the renewal stats or the email stats and things like that. Item number five, legislation. I was just trying to inquire, is there anything that the board would like to see? It's kind of late for this session. I hadn't really planned on doing anything this session. I really did want our language cleanup that we put in last session, but the problem is we don't have a lobbyist, and we're not allowed to hire lobbyists. I mean, I'm the lobbyist for the board, and I can certainly do that, but it's not my proficient skill, if you will. So we do rely on the AZOA and their lobbyists to sort of help us out. So I don't know if the board had anything that they wanted to see, you know, impossible legislation, maybe this year, next year, or the year after. Could be anything, you know, if we are looking at scope expansion, is there anything that the board wants me to research? I usually look at other collegial boards from throughout the United States and Canada to see what everyone's doing. You know, what kind of scope do they have, et cetera, et cetera. So if you don't have anything today, of course, that's fine. This is just my first inquiry into it. But, you know, if it is your gig and you like to do legislation, you know, just let me know if there's something we need to look at for our state. So you can either speak on it now if you have anything, or you can always email me or call me. We can have a confab, and we do like to get together with AZOA and see what's up with them. I know that Dr. Meyer said he's struggling a little bit with his legislative mission because Dr. Hannian, I don't know how many of you knew Dr. Annette Hannian, she stepped down from her position as legislative chair, and she'd been there forever. I want to say like 15 years in that position. So I think the newbies are probably just trying to figure things out and things like that. So it's been kind of quiet on the legislative front, but anything that jumps off the page at you right now for legislation wise for optometry? Okay.
Not necessarily. I was just going to address what you said about the language cleanup. I do want to make sure that we kind of try and get that done. When do you see that going forward then, Margaret? When would be a better time?
Well, I'm going to talk to Dr. Meyer and see if the AZOA would be interested in helping us. You know, it's a kind of a delicate relationship because there is a definite delineation between the state board and the association because we're regulatory, so we have to be careful. We also can't ask them to spend their money. I mean, they're the ones who pay for the lobbyists, not us. And the AZOA has always been very gracious. So if I can get Dr. Meyer to maybe commit their lobbyists to a little more help for us, that would be super helpful. That's why it's always good if the AZOA is running legislation, because we can kind of smoosh ours in with theirs, and then the lobbyists, you know, helps us a lot more efficiently and effectively.
I was just going to ask, does anyone on the board have a relationship with Dr. Meyer?
Stacy Meyer.
Dr. Mestores does.
Oops, I know him.
Yeah, this is Dr. Cohen. I've known Stacy forever. And I was the legislative chair for a number of years before Dr. Hanian. And it is an unbelievable undertaking. And the work that she's done is absolutely remarkable over these many years.
Agree. It's very hard. And like I said, I am the lobbyist for us. I have my own little lobbyist number and everything. And I feel like I'm fairly decent at it, but to be a lobbyist, you really have to be down there at the legislature every day during a session. And I just don't know who has time for that. Not that I'm not trying to do my job, but it's very, very challenging. So that's why it's really terrible that Governor Ducey had removed our ability to, the agency's ability to hire lobbyists. That's actually what I'd like to do, is see that law repealed so that we could hire an outside lobbyist. But
so, Margaret, thank you. Were you asking like if there were any like scope changes that you wanted to know, that if we were interested? Oh, so I'm a big proponent of lumps and bumps. So I don't know if that's something that we could consider starting the process on getting the ability to treat lumps and bumps.
Is that laser or cutting?
Cutting, yeah, not laser. Laser probably will take us a really long time. I feel like we could probably get lumps and bumps sooner.
And injectables, I think, then.
Injectables?
Yeah.
Can allow lumps and bumps.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful for me, because then I can approach the AZOA and see what their vibe is.
There's a training course you can take in Oklahoma, and the guy who does it is, he travels, and he could do an in-state training for us. So I can help you get his information too.
Okay, got it. All right. Well, that's very helpful. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm always thinking about legislation. It's just whether or not we can execute the legislation, which, as you saw last year, we had a challenge, and I was seriously disappointed that ophthalmology, you know, fought this bill, because there wasn't any scope expansion in it. But their lobbyist is very aggressive, and so she just wasn't hearing anything. As far as, you know, because I said, because we had changed, as you hopefully recall, we had changed the surgery language. It still didn't give us surgery. It just sort of updated the language. And she's like, oh, no, you changed it. Now it's surgery. And there was just no talking to her at that point. And
try to be able to challenge the legislation or alter the legislation that doesn't allow us to hire a lobbyist. I mean, maybe the boards. Other boards would agree. Maybe we're better represented if we can hire a lobbyist. All we've tried to do is clean up language in our statutes, not changing anything. And we were blocked for, you know, political reasons. And so maybe we should have access to a lobbyist.
Yes. Well, I can certainly, I agree. And thank you for the support. I definitely have the support of my colleagues, because, you know, we're one of the smaller boards in comparison to what we call the big three, which is medical, dental, and osteopathic. And I'll throw a nursing board in there, actually, probably the big four. But they were devastated by the loss of a lobbyist, because they usually hire two or three lobbyists. They have their own attorneys. I mean, those are huge boards that require, you know, outside lobbying to be successful. So I think I had already kind of put the bug in the ear of my colleagues to say, hey, let's challenge that law this year, because collectively it's always better, you know, than just a little me coming before the legislature arguing for it. So I'll circle back with my colleagues, because I haven't talked about it in a couple months with them. So I think that would be something at least we could do on our end. I mean, if we were successful in that, then that would be helpful, you know, for the following legislative session in 25.
Sure. Well, and our goal was simply to make our language more clear and efficient.
Right.
Licensees, you know, so if we can't do that because we're blocked by other lobbyists, that doesn't work very well. That's not working well. So
yeah, it's not a fair fight, to be honest with you. And I hate to say it like that, but it's, I mean, that's not my area of expertise or forte for that matter. I feel like I'm decent at it. I'm okay at public speaking and things like that, but lobbyists are like very cutthroat and they spend their days calling and schmoozing and talking to the legislators, you know? So, I mean, that's, like I said, it's a lot of work just to do that. So, you know, I have to be able to balance my time. That's where the problem comes in. Okay, well, that's very helpful. And I appreciate the comments and ideas, and I will circle back. So I'll have a report in December as to how far I got with anybody or what's going on. Cause I know the Sunrise legislation process has been removed, but I think the legislature still likes the Sunrise process. So if I can get a bill in the next month, that would be great. Item six, any future agenda items that the board would like to see for December?
How are we on our training and that?
Well, I have to hope and assume that everybody took the training through CLEAR. They don't issue certificates or completion or anything like that, which I was kind of both surprised. Pardon?
They didn't show attendance. I think it was.
No.
It was 6 hours. Did we do 6 hours? Was that about right?
Yes, 6 hours. So I think, I mean, Ms. Baskin has already provided training on several occasions, so I think everyone's probably okay for this year. But of course, January is coming, so that'll start the new year. I think there was some other, did everyone like the CLEAR modules? Because I think they have some newer ones coming or some different board member, or there's like an advanced board member training.
Well, I really liked the convenience of being able to sign on and do it when we had a moment to sit down and plug in and listen to it. So I liked that. I really liked the convenience of it for us.
Yeah, they had the live, they had them live. And then if you missed the live session or weren't able to attend, then they would send a link. I did appreciate that.
Yeah. The live was always, I think, when I was at work. And so I always had to do the, you know, the later session.
Perfect. Dr. Brown or Dr. Cohen, did you?
Dr. Brown, I enjoyed the training and I'm always up for any training that's available.
All right. So I'll look into the CLEAR and then I'm sure we can hit Ms. Baskin up for an hour or two of training, not too much because she's crazy busy with other boards, but training. Okay. Any other future agenda items?
All right.
Yes, Ms. Baskin.
Dr. Moffitt, member of the board, you will be getting an AG legal advice memo on the legislative changes that occurred this last session, and that should be coming in December. There were really only three statutes that generally apply to health boards, maybe not even specifically to optometry, but we can go ahead and plan on reviewing that memo, and we could probably even just do that in executive session for your December board meeting. So that will also be some training. And then I believe, isn't it in January, Margaret, that the conflict training has to be revisited? And I can go ahead and reissue that memo regarding conflict issues that was reviewed last year by the board. So there's going to be opportunities to move forward and have additional training for me. It may be a bite-sized training, but we can coordinate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baskin. Okay, item seven, future board meeting dates. I have December 1st as our next board meeting date as promised, no November meeting. And December 1st is the first Friday, I believe, in December. Does everyone appear to have availability at this time? We would meet in December and then probably on February 2nd, I believe is the first Friday in 2024 for February. January is always, you know, kind of right after the holidays, it would be January 4th or 5th. Legislative session is starting. We have State of the State. So there's just a lot going on. So I would like, if it pleases the board, to meet in December and then in February.
So I have a conflict in February, just so you know, on the 2nd.
Okay. Let me pull up my calendar.
Okay. it could change, but I don't have a lot of control over this one, so.
Okay, no problem.
Maybe running the meeting. We have it.
Well, either that or February 9th, Ms. Baskin, what does your calendar look like? Because I don't want to interfere with your cosmetology or behavioral health board meetings.
I was just pulling it up. So give me a moment.
While she looks at that, is everyone possibly available on February 9th? Or we could do Thursday the 1st.
I can't commit.
Not that weekend either.
I just don't know, but.
How about February 1st? It's a Thursday. I mean, we can certainly have the meeting, you know, whenever. We just have to give notice, which of course we always do. So Thursday, February 1st?
I probably can't do the 1st. I'm sorry.
So February is out for you, Dr.
Well, I mean, I could do probably the 16th or the 23rd. I could commit to that. It's just that definitely on the 2nd right now, I have a big time conflict and it could last more than a week. I just don't know.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah. So January, or I could look at the 16th or the 23rd.
Okay. How about February 16th, everyone?
Ms. Whalen, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. I am available February 16th, and if you would like me to block that off, I'll go ahead and do that, just so that nothing can slip in. And then I'm also available on January 19th, should the board maybe wish to have a meeting in January.
Thoughts, anybody? I mean, it doesn't matter to me when we meet, and we can meet every other month, kind of, you know, starting off depending. So like I said, if we meet in December, we could meet late January, or we could just move that February board meeting to the 16th.
I can do either the 19th of January or the 16th of February. So
either of those. Yes, dates. This is Dr. Cohen. I could do either of those dates as well.
Dr. Brown or Dr. Carpenter, do you happen to know your schedules out then?
Okay. I can make those, Dr. Brown, I can make those days work.
Okay, Dr. Carpenter, you're muted.
Hey, sorry. I think I could make those available. I think both of those are those 3-day weekends. Is that the Friday of a 3-day weekend?
The 19th shouldn't be.
Because there we've got President's Day and
Martin Luther King.
I don't get President's Day off.
I
know that.
Let me pull it up. 2024 holidays. Yeah,
it's the 19th.
So again, I don't think that's an issue for me, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Then the January one, I don't see any.
Right, it's January 15th.
Yeah, Martin Luther.
Yeah, the 15th is Martin Luther King, so we would be. Okay, so Madam President, members of the board, I will ask for you to make the decision then. Do you want the January 19th meeting, or would you prefer to just move it to February 16th?
Well, I guess I would say February 16th is first choice, January 19th, second choice. How about anybody else?
I would agree.
Okay.
Is Dr. Connor there for me as well?
Yeah, I think maybe February 16th.
Okay.
Dr. Brown, February works.
Mr. Hamed, the 16th?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Okay, so I have, let me just go back and make sure I have the right date for December. So I have Friday, December 1st as our next, last, final meeting for 2023. And then February 16th for our first meeting of 2024.
We keep the 8 a.m. time if everybody is.
8 a.m. via Zoom. It'll still be Zoom platform, same as always. Sorry. That concludes my report, Madam President.
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Cohen. If I can make a comment, I just really want to thank Margaret and your team because the materials you get out in a timely manner, it's very thorough, gives us a great opportunity to be prepared for the meetings. And I know it's a lot of work and you often have to do updates, but it's greatly appreciated the time and effort you put in.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cohen.
You guys rock.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much.
I'll say thank you for the statutes, like the link to the statute for the the volunteer license. So just the little extra help is always appreciated, I think so.
Okay, well, I appreciate the feedback and I do apologize for sending late items. I really hate to do that and I almost never do. So I'm always like, you're killing me here when they, like the CE that was sent. But I did instruct Ms. Becker to let them know that they need to provide it the week before because the materials go out on Friday and that's usually my cutoff, like that's it. So so I do apologize for the late ads, yeah. But I appreciate
it. Dr. Cohn, if I can respond to that, it's although I know that this may be a little inconvenience for us, it's so much more preferable than someone having to wait possibly another 2 months to get an answer. So that modification that you're able to do, I don't see it as an inconvenience to have to go and review something quickly before in order to get action taken quicker.
Well, that's exactly my thought. So I appreciate your understanding, Dr. Cohn. That's exactly right. So.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin, and I would also thank Ms. Whelan and Ms. Becker because we have a lot of behind the scenes conversations and review and there's a lot that goes into it that is just not, you know, the week before the board meeting. So this is an ongoing process and I'd like to thank them too. And also to Dr. Moffitt, we have an agenda meeting review. So there is a lot. So I'm glad that the board is getting all the information that they need and timely so that they can review everything and the meetings are running very smoothly. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baskin.
Yeah. Thank you, Mona. Okay, so call to the public, agenda item N, call to the public. Any public members like to address the board? Okay, I hear nothing. Agenda item O, motion to adjourn. Would someone like to make a motion?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohn. I'll make a motion to adjourn and also to thank you, Dr. Moffitt, for continuing to do a wonderful job as leader of the board in your preparation. You make it look easy, and those of us who have been in leadership positions know it is anything but. So greatly appreciated.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments. A little tired this morning, a little hard getting out of gate, but we did it.
Yes.
Is there a second for our motion?
This Dr. Mestor, I'll second.
Thank you both, Dr. Carpenter and Dr. Mestoris. Any further discussion? All right, so we've had a motion to adjourn and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. This concludes this October 6th meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry at 9:32.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. See you in December.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.